I've been living a life where my technology and my hobbies and my tools all coexist with where I live. That's recently changed for various reasons, which I'd like to share and maybe inspire a few people to think about things a different way. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Eric Vitello, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Through most of my life, I have tried to keep my computers and where I sleep almost on top of each other. In high school, I had two rooms separated by a small door that represented my laboratory, and it wasn't long before the parts of the computer that could be wired over into where I slept were also there. A remote monitor, remote controls, and being able to hear what was going on the bulletin board that I was running in the other room. When I was living in Boston, my apartments, more often than not, would be capsules of technology, things going up and down the walls, hanging on shelves, wired into each other, and looking more or less like a spider's nest combined with a forgotten warehouse of parts and books and manuals. The thing is, I liked it. I actually loved the complication, the piles, the intertwining collections that I would have to separate on a common basis. This represented for me an aesthetic that I liked living in. When I was lucky enough, my bedroom and my computer room would be two separate spaces, but more often than not, I would be sleeping in the middle of these piles, enjoying the fact that if I rolled over in either direction, I could keep track of what was going on online and with my processes. I could live in a world, the comforting hum of machinery in the background. There's a very strange tangent to this. In one of my jobs as a system administrator, there was a particular white glove service to the machine room attendants. We actually had full-time people sitting in a room with monitors for indicating the state of all the machines, the network, and they would run on 3 12-hour shifts every week. Naturally, due to the relatively low salary and the 3 days, some of the data center technicians had second jobs or full families that they took care of, and as a result, in the middle of a 12-hour shift, they might need a nap, and they had fashioned a secret nap room in the building, which one day someone let me know about. I said I was feeling a little under the weather, that I needed to lie down, and they let me in to the secret chamber that I could relax in. It was in an out-of-the-way storeroom, which had a few twisting passages in the back of it, which led to a couch that had been moved back there. And with the lights of the room off, you ended up with a quiet sleep chamber that nobody would disturb you in. But it had a second aspect to it I did not expect. Because the storeroom was up against the elevator and represented almost direct passage to the basement, you could hear, in the distance, echoing through the elevator shaft, the sound of the heating and environmental systems of the building. And they were powerful and large and seemed to need to run 24/7. So when I needed to grab a few minutes of sleep every once in a while, I would go in there, lie down on the couch with the lights off, and I would hear, far away, almost at the perception of awareness, a low, dull rumble, a sound like something far away is doing something sinister, digging as deep into the earth as it could go. It was comforting, calming to me, beyond just lying down. I found an emotional connection. So I think, baked into how I think of my living spaces, is an urge to make things enclosed and complicated and representing depths of unfound surprises and wonders that I will discover someday. This has all come to a head multiple times when I've crossed the line from merely having things be complicated to being untenable. All it'll take is somebody sending me 10, 15 boxes to process, or discovering that a project needed all of my attention and I don't do anything for a couple weeks but that project. I look up and things have gotten out of control. There's no way for me to find what I need. I confuse critical projects with items that should be thrown away, and over time, I start to lose track. This situation, this lack of control, has happened to me multiple times in my life and often required new priorities, friends helping, and generally digging my way out from where I put myself. It happens, I think, to almost everybody at some point. You start focusing on one aspect while leaving other aspects to the side, eventually leads to discovering that you've left something aside for way too long. Sometimes, ironically, I've been brought into other people's problems where they've been finding themselves buried with potential and ideas instead of digging through the boxes and machinery that they've been assembling towards an unknown and fuzzy goal. And while I think my advice is valid, it does require a certain outlook that not everybody shares. I find that the best way to dig yourself out of a complicated situation like this is to begin to separate the different roles of what you own. Some of it is yours, a personal photograph, writings you've done, letters from friends, small pieces of art or personal tools that represent you, the things you use, that you care for, that you would consider to be the vital parts of your possession. And of course, there's the easily discernible trash and discards, where unpacking something, you just leave an envelope to the side, it gets stuck into a pile of papers, and until you go through that pile again, you have no idea that there's trash, clean trash, but still trash, buried among your items. But then there's a third group of items, items that are being held in trust. These are things that people are holding on to, either because they see value in them, they wish to process them, making them digital, or putting them into a proper container. But at no point do they really think of it as themselves. These are items that are for others, for society, maintaining old newspapers or videotapes, keeping piles of menus and manuals. Even though you don't use a particular computer or game system anymore, having those items around might be something you'll pick up again or maybe be able to sell or donate in the future. I'll tell you that that third group of potentials and promises, that is what buries you. Because it's not a part of your day or your personal effects, these items sit. They take up shelf space. They take up attics and basements and will block off the things that you want or need to do. All of this to say that recently I decided that I would rent a dedicated office. The thinking and motivation is this. I still have a small storage unit, only a shadow of what used to be in the shipping container, but still pretty significant. And inside that is everything from high school transcripts to videotapes, magazines, and computer manuals donated mere weeks or months ago. Some of the items in storage represent these personal effects that I think of as vital or at least important to myself. The rest of them are merely promises. Promises that sending me items will get them digitized or get them assessed or donated to where they need to go. Promises that as I try to work in ingesting all sorts of media, that all of the machinery I've either acquired or bought to do that will find use. And maybe it's me getting older, but I wanted to take a shot at truly separating the work from the living. The idea of going into a room with a bed that isn't surrounded by beeping, humming, and wires is relatively new for me, certainly something that I haven't done in about 20 years. This represents to me a new chapter. The office is small, 5x7 with its own lock internet access, and the right to put whatever I want in there. This office, I hope, will be a stand that I can use to start going through what I have and what I'm doing. My hope is to stream questions and answers, interact with people, be able to focus on all the projects that I have and move through items that may have seen months or even years of waiting. In this separate space is where I finally decide what stays, what goes, what gets processed. And I've been finding, at least for now, that it is extremely helpful to know that when I set through a door down the street, that area, that office, is where I do certain kinds of work, while home is another. I'm very, very lucky to have this situation. This will enable me to push through a lot of my backlog, both online and off, and will allow people to watch it happen in real time as I move through what I'm expecting to be a few dozen boxes of hopes, dreams, and videotapes. And while the home where I put my head down, the bedroom that I sleep in, doesn't have that low, dull hum I found so relaxing, like a spaceship or a heartbeat back at my old job, I definitely have been feeling that when I go to sleep somewhere, a small office contains, for me, a to-do list that is no longer surrounding me, but waiting patiently until I'm ready. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoianu, Mark Pilgrim, Peter Healy, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Matt Reynolds, Sean Kelly, John Sturm, Manxalot, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. This to-do list represents, in many ways, its very own debt. It's a set of promises that I made to people, to signing on with efforts or convincing myself that it would only be a short period of time to turn something digital, sort through a pile of papers, or find something a home. The fact that these projects are my debt and my lien now, far away from the financial horrors that I was facing years ago, is due to this podcast, that I can turn to this newest bill and pay it off, scan by scan, trashing and discard, is thanks to you.